everything up, Frank.
Okay.
Your mind is what's supposed to be about buying a boat. When you buy a boat, you're supposed to be, oh, I got a boat.
Don't you just buy it and get in and start heading out onto the water?
If you have money, yes.
Yeah, okay.
For the rest of us poor slobs, yeah. We buy somebody else's problem.
Right.
And it turned out really nice, but we finally made the 60-some-mile journey, got the boat back to the house, right? And I opted and spent the money, and it was a few thousand dollars to have a power assist on the, like power steering in a car.
Okay, yeah.
You know, because it's hydraulic steering, but with twin 300s on it, and that's probably got, oh, say 50 feet of hose for the hydraulic steering. And then you have dual helms, so that always adds a little bit more to the turning. In the main cabin, in the salon, I guess you would call it, that's where you steer from downstairs.
That's what rich people call it.
Yes. Well, no problem. Giant steering wheel, things 2.5-3 feet across. And you just turn it, no big deal. You go up on top in the flying bridge, and you got this little tiny steering wheel. And you go to turn, you're like, ugh. It feels like you're breaking something when you go to turn it. So I have the power assist put on. Go all the way up 60-some miles. We leave the marina, and we get out to the end of the canal. We're hitting the intercoastal, and there's this big open area. I said, well, we'll drop the anchor because I had new chain, new rope put in and all that, right? Drop the anchor, see how that goes. We'll get a drink. Kind of, you know, walk around the boat a little bit. We haven't never really been on the boat on the water. So I dropped the anchor chain, and I forget the only way to stop the thing is to, you got to hit raise, because when you've got it lowering, it just free spools. When you hit raise, it locks it in, locks the rope up. Well, I forgot. So I'm tying to the...
So is this like a bait caster that you forget to put your thumb on?
Oh, yeah. And so I tie it off to the head, you know, the winch head, and I said, nah, close enough for now. And we get a soda, and we'll kind of walk around the boat. Now, it's got a year and a half's worth of dirt and dust inside of it. So much for I'm going to let other people do the work and just have this beautiful boat that I can just get on and enjoy. Better off doing the work yourself. Save you a gazillion dollars, and you got to clean it anyway. So, anyway, I go to get the anchor back up, and the windlass, the knot where it goes from the chain to the rope, the splice binds up, locks it all up in there. So I pull it up by hand, tie it off, put a safety line on.
We're not talking a little tiny 18-foot boat anchor here, are we?
No, we're talking about a 75-pound anchor.
Yow.
Yeah, it's heavy. I got to tell you, that was an interesting way, but to be quite honest,
you are looking kind of buff after that experiment. Yeah?
I'm feeling more buff.
Okay,
yes.
Good.
my back is feeling buffed. Yes,
like a buffalo hit you.
Yeah,
right?
Like a buffalo hit me. But anyway, we got that up. We take off, and they said, you know, don't run at one speed for a while because the motors only have a few hours on them. So we're going along, we're doing about 7 miles an hour, we go up 15, down to 10, we're playing around with all the different things, we're up on the flying bridge. I still have not drove the boat from inside, we've only had the one trip on it, but going along the ICW, I racked it up to like 25 for a little while, but as soon as the boat comes, I got to back off, I'm throwing a 5-foot wake, you know?
Yes.
And I don't want to kill anybody. So, basically, it was 7, 10, 15 miles an hour, just varying the speed up all the way up from the bottom of Pine Island. And we get up right inside Boca Grande Pass. And it was funny because there was a couple of boats around and other things. So I'm just putting along there. And you see the boats all hitting the throttles, and they're looking at the old houseboat like, you know, oh, my God, you guys are just putting along. Well, it was time to rack it up a little bit, you know, put some, you know, half hour at higher RPMs. So I fired it up about 30, and I go past a couple little pontoon boats, and I see them look at it and look behind them at the wake, and they're pulling away and all that. And so I racked it up to about 37 for a little while. And then slowed back down to 35 and then to 30 and now 25, 20. But it was nice. And being up on the flying bridge, I think you're like 12 feet off the water.
Yeah, I was going to say the view from up there has got to be really cool.
I went by several channel markers and I could look down in the water and see schools of bait fish all gathered up. You know, and it's funny because people think you got to go to this marker or that marker. They don't realize every marker could hold bait, any marker, a single piling. Now, the 3 and 4 piling markers tend to hold more bait fish because it's better hideout.
Yeah, bigger shadow, too.
Yeah, bigger shadow, and, you know, you can zoom around in between there if a predator comes. But several single piling markers with, you know, hundreds of pieces of bait swimming behind them. I've noticed bait is less likely to come to the surface now. We're going along, and the boat's really nice around 10 miles an hour, and which is, what, like 8 knots?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's actually a pretty good speed with the boat. You got good control. It doesn't wobble or, you know, tip or anything. And it was just shocking how many schools of bait I saw from up there that I know I wouldn't have seen from my boat being so, you know, right on the water level. Crazy amounts of stuff. But you're going to enjoy the ride. And we finally got all the cushions and everything where they belong, getting the boat all cleaned up. And sitting up on the flying bridge, you got 2 captain's chairs. And then on the left side, there's all cushion, and then there's a seat. Well, right in that one corner, it's amazing because you're sitting there on the cushions, you're right on the edge, and it is the perfect spot on the boat. You know, every boat has a sweet spot. That one's going to be fought over a bit. Looking down into the water, feet up, what a ride.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen the pictures. It's a beautiful boat, definitely a beautiful boat.
But
a 5-foot wake? I mean, manatees could surf a 5-foot wake.
Yeah, when you get up and you're not really all the way on the throttles, when you get all the way on the throttles, it's probably 3 foot.
Mm-hmm.
But in that middle thing where she's got a big butt, you know, it's a fat bottom girl. There's no doubt about it. And dragging that back, you know, that her butt through the water like that, she'll roll away. You got to be really careful.
Yeah, I'm wondering how the local kayak club is going to react to.
I'm way better about it than there was. We were passed by 30, 40, probably some 60, 80 foot boats.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 of them didn't really get off the throttles hardly at all. They did what's even worse. They slowed down a little bit.
Yeah, and then they throw a big one after that, yeah.
So I was kind of curious how the boat was going to handle that. So I turned into one, no problem at all, probably rolling 4 or 5 footers, and didn't notice it. So I quartered on another one, still no problem, you know, just a little bit of pause, hesitation in your forward motion, but other than that, you didn't really feel it. But I let one go by, and I stayed sideways to it. You can rock and roll with that boat.
Oh, I would think.
It's like, whoa to one side, over to the other side. I could hear stuff flying around downstairs. I said, okay, yeah, we want to keep into those waves a little bit with this. But I let it hit me broadside.
Yeah.
You know, there were 3 to 4 footers, you know, from a boat. So they're traveling probably 25, 30 miles an hour. The waves are coming at you. And then, yeah, it was weird.
And you weren't bathtub water when you were running either. You had a little bit of chop, didn't you, that day?
Actually, that day was fairly calm up until the sea breeze kicked in.
Yeah.
Then it got pretty choppy, but they were like 1, 1.5 foot waves, and you don't even feel it.
Hmm.
You don't even notice they're there, you know. But remember I was telling you about this power steering, and I spent all this money, a few thousand dollars I have put in?
Right.
Get all the way up, and the reason I put it in, it's actually probably easier to steer the boat with stiff steering when you're going, you know, distance up the harbor and, you know, intercoastal and all that, because you don't oversteer. When the steering is real easy, you tend to oversteer a little bit.
Yeah, you play around with it all the time.
Yeah, you're...
It doesn't take much.
Doing that serpentine, you're dodging bullets as you go up.
Right, right.
You know. But what was cool about it, everything worked perfectly. It was awesome. I got to check this because the last time that was...
live radio.
Text from Terry. And no, it's not. It's Ray Smith. I don't know. Oh, sending me a bill.
Ah.
Holy cow.
Yes, boys and girls, if you have any bills that you need Frank to pay, just send them right here to the radio station.
Speaking of which, Murdoch Tire is the most awesome place in the world.
Without it. That, you know, those guys, they take care of you. They do a great job. And
it's literally, Cliff came into town, so I said, oh, don't worry about it. Just use Subaru. You know, you don't have to rent a car. I'll just let you use my Subaru. We're going to try and sell it. So I have Subaru Baja for sale if anybody wants one. Really nice, except it was sitting at Robert's house because Robert drove it for quite a while. But anyway, he's got a new car. So I said, well, Cliff, I'll take you over. We're going to get Subaru anyway. You can just drive that while you're here. So he goes down and I'm like, holy cow. He didn't even get to the store, and it overheated. And we thought, well, we can baby it enough to get it up to Murdoch Tire. No, it's sitting at Wendy's there by Olean. Jim's got to go get it with tow truck. But I pull in. My one tire, it's showing I got a low tire. And Cliff and I are looking all over the tread, trying to figure out what's going on with it. And I pull in there, and it's getting lower as it goes, because that happened last night. I noticed it was getting low. And he says, oh, not in a good spot. I said, what, you found the leak? Points down, there's a nail sticking out of the sidewall. Little finish nail.
Yep. Game over, man.
Right through the sidewall.
Yep, game over, man.
But I stopped there, got two new tires while I was coming up here. Still had plenty of time to get the show.
Yep, I cannot ever say enough good stuff about Murdoch Tire. They've taken such good care of us. Everybody here at the radio station that goes there. I
mean, everybody at Fish and Frank's.
Yep, yep. They are great people, and they're honest, which is a big, big deal in the automotive repair industry.
Jim's going in for surgery. Jim Crothers owns that, and one of the most amazing people you've ever met in your life. He is literally, you know, he should be put up in a church somewhere with his, you know, face on it. But he's going to go in for surgery and have part of his colon out.
Oh, not good.
Oh, no. Hearts and thoughts go out to him, boy.
Yeah.
He's just one of those amazing humans. He's what people think I am.
Yeah.
So, anyway, back to the power steering. I spend all this money and get everything in, and we go along, and everything's working perfectly. Now, my boat is just slightly, the length of the boat is almost identical to the width of the canal. So I got to come in, make a 90-degree turn. Then there's a boat lift on the right I have to avoid, a boat lift diagonal from that on the left. Both of those people put 12-foot boat lifts. They're only allowed to be out 10-foot. They're all, so the canal's only like 16, 18 feet wide between them. I got a 12-foot boat. So I got to thread this needle after I make a 90-degree turn with rocks and seawalls and all this stuff. And so I come in, and the boat's turning nicely. It handles so well. And I go to hit reverse and spin the wheel the other way just to bring the back of the boat, straighten her out so I can go right between them. Power steering quit. I'm like, you got to be kidding. I'm yelling at Terry, it locked up. I can't steer it. I can't steer it. I'm forcing a little bit of adrenaline because we took off the wheel that was on the top, put on a smaller wheel with a suicide knob on it.
Oh, great.
I couldn't even turn it. And so I'm forcing around. I finally got the I'm reversing on the starboard engine. I got the port engine going forward, trying to get the motors to straighten up. So I'm muscling the motors back straight, and I ended up having to go through running just on the outboards with no steering wheel whatsoever. And their explanation was, well, it was supposed to have a 40 amp, but we didn't have any, so I put a 30 in there. I thought that'd be good enough.
Mm-hmm. Apparently it wasn't.
It wasn't. So anyway, then we get back, found out they had not hooked up all the automatic charging stuff. It's supposed to power distribution to all the different batteries and stuff. That wasn't hooked up. The generator wouldn't run. That was had issues that they had. But they came right up and fixed it all. As of this second, of this minute, of this hour, of this day, everything's okay. We'll see what 5 minutes brings. But
yeah.
As of for right now, everything's kind of going good. But it was a very interesting trip. We had a ball. It's literally an amazing to sit up in the flying bridge and just, you know,
this is all the stuff. This is all the stuff you were dreaming about.
Yeah.
And now there it is sitting out right behind the house.
Yeah, it's sitting there. So
now whether you're able to get back out of the canal or not.
Tomorrow I do the test to see if I can turn the boat around.
Okay.
Now, mind you, I made a special berth for it behind the house, put the pilings in. That all worked perfectly. It sits exactly where I thought it would sit, the way I thought it would sit. So if my math was correct there.
Uh-oh.
Now, the math on this is I went on the internet and found out how to figure the diagonal distance of a boat because I've got about 42 foot overall
mm-hmm.
with the length of the boat and the outboards. 42, 42 and a half. But that doesn't include the diagonal. The boat's longer diagonally than it is lengthwise, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
So if I did everything correctly, I can take it out and turn it with about 3 feet to spare, 2 feet to spare.
And if not?
Then I'm really kind of screwed. I get back out of there. So, you know.
It all sounds good, Frank.
We'll see if my math was right.
Okay.
Luckily, it's not my math. It's plugging it into programs on the internet. And then you take a rope and you go from one side of the canal and you hold the rope on the other side of the canal. You run black tape on it. And then you measure it.
Okay.
So that's how I know exactly how
wide the canal
was.
The analog way of doing it, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, I do everything analog. I'm not good with digital stuff. But anyway, long-winded, ridiculous story about houseboat that nobody cares about. Can't believe it's what we relate to. So anyway, a lot of fishing going on, and I guess that's what we're here to talk about. Any fish you're interested in?
Cobia. I'm always interested in cobia.
Well, the numbers have backed off in the harbor considerably. But we do have a very good number of cobia from Marker 5 Cape Hayes out to Boca Grande Pass. And once you're getting out past the pass, a lot of the nearshore reefs, the Mary's, Power Pole, Helens, all those close ones, have cobia on them sporadically. So if you're out there snapper fishing or something, keep a rod handy for the cobia because you be none there, then all of a sudden they're all around you. And they are still coming up to the Alligator Creek Reef, not steady like they were, but it's 50-50 right now. If you're at the Alligator Creek Reef, 50-50 that the cobia and you are going to show up at the same time. Same thing with the nearshore reefs. As you get out into that 60 feet of water, your odds improve a little bit. You get out in 80, 100 feet of water, your odds are even better. But you're not seeing them. You're just accidentally catching them down there because unless the day is actually pretty darn calm, they're not hugging the surface at all. So it's got to be almost mill pond to get them to come up to the surface. Otherwise, they're 10, 20 feet over the wreck or over the reef,
mm-hmm.
and which in some cases put it 20 to, you know, 60 feet of water below you. But there is still cobia there, just different than they were a couple weeks ago. It's surprising how much water's coming down the river this week. that last few rains we got, which are really unimportant, but it rained a lot from between Arcadia and Orlando.
Yeah, there was a lot of rain coming down in the middle of the state. A
lot of rain in the middle of the state. That's what brings water into the harbor. If it rains in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, it really doesn't change the harbor much. It'd be like raining over the Gulf of Mexico. It's not going to change anything. Otherwise, the hurricanes would, what, make it freshwater? No, it doesn't happen. But when it rains over a wide area upriver, you have all that ground and the water runs, you know, down the slopes, into the ditches, into the creeks, into the river. So you have miles and miles of watershed all coming out right there between Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda. And that's what's been happening. My neighbors got fishing lights out. And 2 weeks ago, the area was probably 10 foot across on the light. And I was looking at him last night, and the light is maybe 2.5 feet across. You know, when you see lights in the water, the spread of the light tells you how clear it is. And right now, very small pattern of light. So a lot of fresh water coming down. We had a bunch of tarpon up in the river, a lot of small sharks. And most of that has pushed down towards the harbor. We've still got some fish up there. Not like it was a couple weeks ago, though. But we still got a lot of jacks up there. And I know that because I was on the boat this morning, fired up the generator, getting stuff running because I don't have shore power yet. And looked out, and the whole school of jacks blew up all behind the boat. So nice bunch of jacks, too. They're, I would say, probably 5 to 8 pounds, bigger fish.
Yeah, those are nice jacks to catch. And they're also really good eating jacks at that size.
So, you
know, somebody asked me the other day, we were talking the last couple of weeks about how much squid was in the harbor.
Yes.
Does that still hold, or is they moved back out again?
No, they've moved out to the Gulf.
Okay.
So, yeah, they've moved back out, and...
And but, does that mean the mackerel have moved along with them back out again?
Say that again?
Mackerel.
Yeah.
Are they not in the harbor anymore? They're all offshore now?
Mackerel are Cape Hayes and stuff. We're getting that fresh water cover. So if they do come up, and they're still coming up to marker one in the reef, because it's still very salty as you get down about 1.5 to 2 foot down into the water, it's still very salty down there. River water hits the harbor, and it's like it goes on a ramp. It comes up and goes across the top of the salt water. It doesn't mix in. And so that first foot or two is very fresh. It's making it very hard for people catching greenbacks, threadfins, and stuff south in the harbor, like devilfish or two pines. As they come back up towards Port Charlotte, their bait's dying because the boat sucks the water from that first foot, and it's very fresh in the harbor right now. But when we go out from Cape Hayes, that's still blue-green water from Cape Hayes out, and you'll see the mackerel more there. You can spot the birds and stuff. Once you get around Cape Hayes, the closer you get towards Port Charlotte, you're not going to see the mackerel, even if they're there, which makes them more tricky because they're a schooling, I guess maybe pelagic-type fish where they just run. Mm-hmm. And it brings you in that deer hunter scenario where you have a deer hunter sitting on the side of a field all day, and he's waiting for a deer to go across. And he thinks it's a likely spot, but there's obviously no deer there. So he sits there and waits until the deer crosses. When you're fishing open water, and especially when the water gets a little brown, fresh on the top, you're doing the same thing. You just pick the spot, that's your blind, whatever it is, and you're fishing there hoping a fish is going to come by you while you're there. Make sense?
It does. I always thought that if you drift at that point, don't anchor, just drift. You're going to be moving with the current. Everything else is moving with the current. So sooner or later, you may cross schools and bait and things like that. But if you anchor up in one spot, you may not see anything the entire day.
Yeah. I'm working deals as I
Yes, he's conducting that, business for Fish and Frank's.
Well, there's several thousand dollars at stake here. So.
Okay, go get him, Frank.
Yeah. It's funny because I don't look like I do much, you know. I try and help put up merchandise and wait on customers and clean the bait tanks and sweep the floors and mop and do all that stuff.
Yeah, but you don't do much.
You really don't, you know, people don't see, as the owner of a business, all the things you deal with and take care of during the course of a day. And right now, we've probably got $400,000 worth of tackle in there. And, you know, it's a lot to keep that much stuff in and keep it coming. And we're still running out of stuff. And
the supply chain hasn't gotten better?
It's going to get nothing but worse for another year or two.
Yeah, I'm hearing that in a number of industries. We were talking the other day about cars that have constant velocity transmissions.
Yep.
Say the prayer that nothing happens to your transmission because it's a good year to get the parts for them.
Yeah. Yeah, everything is a number of problems because Washington, D.C. has mandated, and they are in charge of international shipping. If you have a company, you want to bring goods into the United States, whether it's from Europe or Asia or wherever it is, that has to be cleared through the U.S. government. And the U.S. government mandated only union ports. Now, unions are great, not arguing the union part of it, except that we have ports in the Carolinas, Virginia, Florida, Louisiana, and Texas the ships are not allowed to go through. Because people think, well, yeah, if you leave China, easiest place is California. But they can come the other way out of China, come through the Suez Canal and hit the Atlantic. Only one port they're allowed to use. That's in New York. It's the only union port. So when China stopped their subsidies in 21, shipping cost coming in was average about $3,000. That took it up to about $14,000, $15,000. But because the government now is mandating you have to go to Union Port, the backlogs are so great that they can't get workers at the port, so there's time. We're paying for the ships to sit there at anchor. We're paying for the backlog on the docks. You're paying for union truck drivers. You can't be an owner-operator. You can't be an independent and go to a port and pick anything up. You have to be a union member. So all this has added another layer onto it. So it went from $3,000 to ship something into the U.S. to about $14,000, and now it's up right at $30,000.
Yeah, if you want to see a fun app, look at Ship Tracker. Turn on Ship Tracker after you download it. Both Apple Store and Android has it. And then go look at California. And you can see all of the ships that are backed up outside the ports.
It's crazy.
And it's I'm not talking, you know, 10 ships, 15 ships. I'm talking hundreds of ships.
Sitting
offshore off of California. And then you can actually see the line of the ships that are coming in and going out of port. And it looks like this big, giant parking lot is offshore, and they're letting a few cars through every now and then.
Yeah. It's literally amazing, but it has literally China was giving 15 to 30% tax breaks for any company that was shipping stuff to the U.S. They wanted the U.S. hooked on cheaper Chinese stuff. They wanted to corner the markets on things and auto parts, medicines, all this other kind of stuff. Well, in early 21, they canceled all the tax breaks. With the pandemic and everything going on, they decided no more tax breaks for the U.S. And then 4 to 6 months later, they canceled the shipping subsidies. Said, nope, U.S. is on their own. They were not going to help supply them with cheaper goods anymore.
Okay, so how does this affect us as fishermen? And let me tell you.
Raising the price of everything.
Well, because you can't get screw eyes, you can't get wire to make hooks, you can't get the hooks, you can't get those little propeller blades.
There's a lot of different stuff. All our bobbers and floats are made in the U.S. I'm not buying any of the Chinese knives. All the knives we buy are Dexter Russell, which are all made in the U.S. For almost 200 years, Dexter Russell has been making knives in the U.S., and they're very close to the price of the import knives. The only other knife we're really doing much with right now is Rapala and Williamson, because they're made in Finland. They're our European allies. So every place that we can, we're switching to American brands, American companies. There's a lot you can't, though. A lot of the bigger companies are all import-based. And the bigger the company, more likely it is to be all imported stuff.
Yeah, I'm doing similar. I'm trying to buy as much American-made goods as I can. I just bought a knife from Wilkinson's.
Wow.
Cute little thing, isn't it?
That is cute. It does look like a mini straight razor.
It does.
I'm sitting there looking, going, well, okay, you've been threatened.
Yeah.
Yes.
But anyway, so I think that's a good thing to do. If you can buy an American-made product, do it. It may be a little bit more expensive, but in the end, you're going to save money.
I don't think there's going to be that much cost difference here in a very short time. So, good. That deal went through.
Okay, very good.
It just saved me $5,000.
Fantastic.
That was awesome. One of the things is when you go in our store, we have one wall of spoons that's all American made, and we have the other wall of spoon that's all import. So we're trying to mark stuff. All DOA products are 100%, even the packaging, is made in the U.S. DOA is all American made. He doesn't import anything. It's all done in the States.
And if you only had one lure, one artificial.
If you're only going to fish one brand.
DOA Baitbuster, right?
Well, the Terrorize, the Baitbuster,
yes, all of
the
those.
Shrimp. I mean, DOA makes some awesome product. The Cal Shad. And it's C.A.L. Shad, Cal Shad. And can I say ass on the radio?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so cheap ass lures.
Yeah.
That's Mark Nichols. That's why he calls them a Cal Shad.
All right.
And the Cal Baits. Mm-hmm. All that Cal stuff stands for cheap ass lures.
Right.
So he's funny. I guess I shouldn't have said that when I asked you. Can I say that?
Well,
too late now. All right. I'll accept the fine. I'll pay it. All right. A lot of fun stuff going on. It's peewee season. Oh, did we get hit with that? People don't understand shrimp because we're Americans and we're learning humility every day. You go into Publix. I love Publix, my favorite store. And when you go into Publix, there's no tomato sauce. You've got to buy some ready-made stuff or this or that. But tomato paste and tomato sauce, for a while, you just couldn't get it. And we're seeing that happen in a lot of different things. But I don't know. Where was I going? Trying to remember what the heck. I was on a whole train of thought there, and I
and I'm not going to help you, Frank.
Yes, I know. Okay. DOAs.
This is what happens when you get old, boys and girls.
Oh,
hope that
God.
You never live as long as we do and have to deal with the mental issues that Frank and I have.
I'm just sitting here, and I had this whole thing about, because we were talking about DOAs and American made and the spoons, and then I went into another thing, and I have no idea where I was going. I lost it on that. But availability, different stuff. I don't know where I was. I've lost it. Anyway.
So what about Barracuda, Frank?
Barracuda. Let's go into snook and redfish.
Yes, yeah, snook and redfish.
Now, with snook and redfish, you're literally up the river. We have some decent snook up there. Snook don't really care about freshwater, saltwater. They're one of the fish that they live in Okeechobee. If you have a bit of a mineral content, they're fine. They just can't lay eggs and stuff. They do lay eggs and they do spawn, but basically they're just not viable. They sink instead of float. But nice snook fishing up around Harbor Heights. We've got a bunch of smaller snook, a few bigger ones coming in. Now, on the Port Charlotte Canal side, they have been doing very good on the snook. guys are taking their boats up along Edgewater, and if you anchor up on the high side of the tide, just drift shrimp back up in there or bait fish if you got them. Cut bait works. There's some nice 40-plus inchers underneath those bridges on Edgewater. Whether it's West Spring Lake, East Spring Lake, the Sunrise, all those are doing pretty good. Now, we're seeing a bunch of smaller tarpon running around. And the Manchester Waterway, it's the Manchester, if you're going into Alligator Bay where Port Charlotte Beach is, if you go to the right, you're going to Elkham by Grassy Point. If you go to the left on those first channel markers, that takes you up the Ackerman, and right before the bridge on Midway, make a left up that canal. And when you're looking up that canal, you've come in Alligator Bay, gone through the first set of channel markers, leads to the Ackerman Canal. You're going to go down when you see the there's a square lake on the right, just past that. You're going to see the bridge on Midway. You're going to make a left turn right before there. Now, as you're looking down that canal, about halfway down to the end of where you can see, there used to be an old lock there. And there's still a bit of rubble there and some deeper spots from where they dug out the old lock. And that's been holding a ton of tarpon. It's just gazillion tarpon been in there. And they're there for several hours during the day, on and off, for the last about week. So we don't know, are they moving up and making the right to go back up into the lake system back there, or if they're going back out to the harbor. But they've been in that canal, and right now it's a good 50-50 shot. If you get there, you're lucky, you're going to have a great day. Just keep in mind, no lures over 2 inches long. Little tiny stuff. That's what those tarpon are going to eat. They're not going to eat that bigger stuff. Their DOA bait buster, soon as you get out in Alligator Bay or the harbor, switch to the bait buster. You're going to do good. Back up in the canals, if you want to fish a DOA, use the Terrorize, regular size, or even the tiny Terrorize. You're going to do great. Or the small Storm Swim Shad, the little tiniest one. Those are another great bait for those tarpon. But as you go up and around the corner, you've got some black drum up there. You got a bunch of snook back up there in the lakes right now. The Micah Cutoff had a bunch of snook in it. Now there's been some redfish on the south end of the cutoff toward Charlotte Harbor. The north end is up by, closer to Algebine. That out in front on that harbor side, south side, you've got a long sandbar shoal that goes over towards the Micah River. A little bit on the harbor side, but there's been more redfish on the backside of that bar, and they're traveling in small packs, 3 to 6 fish, 3 to 7 fish, whatever you might have. But there is some nice redfish to be had there. Now, going down the west wall, you're seeing some nice redfish and snook moving back up in there. May and June are the two peak spawning months on the Gulf of Mexico for your snook fishing. And a lot of those big snook have left the beaches and are starting to come back up in the harbor. And from Cape Hayes all the way up that west side, you've got some real nice snook fishing. And for some reason or other, there's some kind of just under slot redfish up in there, and which is where they should be. They just haven't been there for the last few years. But those little under slot redfish, and you can use shrimp, crabs, you can use white bait if you want, but the snook is best on white bait right now. But the redfish, crabs, shrimp, doesn't really matter. They're going to probably eat it better than the bait fish.
Peewee shrimp.
That's what it was. Oh, my God. People are so used to getting what they want when they want it.
Right.
And we've become very spoiled. That's what was going on with that. And I tell people, well, shrimp are going to be hard to get, and they're going to be very tiny. Well, what is it, supply chain? No, it's God and nature. God goes, shrimp must grow up. And what happens is shrimp, the same ones you eat are the same ones we use for bait. They grow up in the back bays, the canals. If you're on a salt or brackish water canal, creek, anything like that, they all have shrimp in them. If you're in Englewood, Northport, Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, wherever you are, the whole harbor is all full of shrimp. Now, as these shrimp begin to grow, and they get up about 5-6 inches long, they want to migrate, and this usually starts happening November, December, as late as January. But sometime between November and January, these shrimp start heading out of the harbor. Now, that is when the commercial boats don't come in and rape and pillage the entire harbor and kill all our bait for nothing, because most of it's too small for them to use. I wouldn't mind it, but they throw back anything that's not a big shrimp. So they get, say, 100 pounds of big shrimp. They throw away 200 pounds of stuff back in the water dead that's too small for them. It's a huge waste. Should be illegal. But as the shrimp are migrating out, they want to go out to the Gulf of Mexico to live in 60-plus feet of water. Shrimp is actually a deep-water creature. Tarpon do it, redfish do it, mangrove snappers, sheephead, pinfish, all grow up in the harbor, Goliath grouper, and as adults go out. The weird part about shrimp is you cannot net them in much more than 15 feet of water. We think they get the bends. Now, this is a creature that does not die with red tide, but if you net them in 20, 25 feet of water, by the time the shrimp get to the surface, they're all dead. Under 15 feet is better. You can probably boost it up to maybe 20, but under 15, 5, 6, 10 feet of water is the best, 3 feet of water. So they're dragging very slow, and they're pulling very short poles. When you have a commercial boat, you're getting food shrimp. They go deep water, shallow water, doesn't matter, and they pull until the boat starts to slow down because they want the net full of shrimp or whatever, you know, whatever they're all going to pile up in that net. And then they bring it up on the deck. They throw all the shrimp on ice. The rest of the stuff they throw overboard. And the ratio is like 1 pound of edible shrimp for 15 pounds of dead stuff. I think that's 15 to 1. 15 they throw overboard, 1 pound they put in the holds. Not a very great percentage, in my opinion. But for the live bait guys, they don't pull more than 10 or 15 minutes. Usually it's less than 10 minutes. So they're going very slow. They pull the nets across the bottom and bring them up, and those shrimp are supposed to be alive. So the stuff that is coming onto the boat, they're throwing back in the water, and about 80% of it is alive when they throw it back in the water. It's a much different process. But as soon as they get too deep, and shrimp want to live in deep water, they can't go after them. One of the reasons we keep big shrimp until usually sometime in June is when you go north of Tampa, the Gulf for 20, 30 miles is only 15 feet deep. You know, you go out 20 miles and you're only in 10, 15 feet of water. Well, it takes shrimp a long time to migrate out along there so they can catch bigger shrimp for a longer period of time. Whereas in Charlotte Harbor, every time the tide goes out, and usually at night, if you have an outgoing tide, the shrimp come off the bottom and swim along with the tide. When the tide comes in, the shrimp can't swim against the tide, so they go to the bottom, they bury up, they try and get something to eat, rest, and as soon as the tide turns around and starts going out, they pop up off the bottom and follow it out. So if the shrimping's not very good right now, it's by May, it's usually over, but we had some pretty decent shrimping in May. Placida, Stump Pass, Gasparilla Pass, Boca Grande Pass, and it's one of the things I'm hoping to do with the boat. You get out there at high tide, because what happens after high tide? The water's falling, and the water goes out. So you go out there and dip shrimp up with a big light in the water, and they swim up to the light. Ta-da! And you dip them up. And so much for going into the light.
Yes, don't do it.
Don't go
into the
light.
Don't do it, because a big net's going to come and take you away.
I wonder, because we always hear about we should be going into the light. Is this like we're in the shrimp zone? We go into the light and there's a alien creature with a big net dipping us up, putting us in beer batter? You know, it could be. I don't know. Everything all right?
So I just want to let you know that Joe has been looking at the numbers of live internet listeners right now.
Yes.
And for every pipe that we open up, every data pipe, you can get 1,000 listeners into a data pipe. There's 14 data pipes open right now. So you've got over almost 15,000 people listening on the internet.
Oh, I
right
feel bad
now.
For you.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Your lives are horrible. You're listening to me instead of doing... No. Thank you very much. We love you guys. How many years has this been? It's been a long time.
We've been doing this a long time, Frank.
Yeah. But I promise next week, we're actually going to be going out in the boat, fishing. I bought this boat, so at least... Every week to 2 weeks, I'm going to be on the water fishing, so you're going to be getting live, much more in-depth stuff, what we're using, where we are, and yes, I will tell you where I caught the fish. I always have. I have one secret spot, which I'm going to take you to just so you can see it, because I never take anybody there because it's really difficult to find. And I've only seen one other boat there, two old guys in a little aluminum boat. But...
What was the joke we saw the other day? This is my secret fishing spot. And the other guy says, yeah, it's really good. Even the fish can't find it.
Yes, exactly. But this one's actually pretty good. But we've got some great fishing going on around the harbor. Starting to slow down now a little bit with the heat. Look at it from your perspective. While not everything should be dealt in human terms, because people want to inject their feelings into everything. I feel like that's bad. Like when my grandkids, I'm bleeding all over the place because I jammed a hook through my foot, and I got to push the treble hook out, crush the barb, take the treble hook back out of my feet. I'm bleeding all over. They don't care. But the fish has got a few drops of blood, and they're freaking out.
Oh, no, the fish is bleeding.
You're the fish is hurt. I'm like, what about me? I didn't die. I had some blood here, you know? And the grandson wouldn't keep fishing because seeing the fish bleed hurt his heart. Seeing his grandpa bleed didn't matter. My granddaughter, she saw it. She went, oh, yeah, look at that. Okay, let's go fishing. I love her. That kid is awesome. But, oh, geez, I'm losing my mind. I got so many things going on. I can't keep a thought going.
Well, this is life at Fish and Frank's.
We will be right on track with the fishing and everything else. And like you say, with the secret spot, you're going to love this spot. It's not far from here, by the way. And it's amazing because you go into this, you look at this little cove, and what you can't see is the shoreline kind of bends around. And when you look in it, looks like it's just a cove. But when you get all the way up in there, there's a passageway out of it. And it goes back up to a couple of big lakes. It's really cool back in there. It's the only spot I don't tell anybody about. I tell you about every other spot I fish. I don't have any other secret ones. But this spot isn't big enough for several boats, you know. But other than that, and you got to come on the boat.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
Way too much money, too much effort, too much heartache, too much headache. But when you're on it, it's so cool.
Yeah.
It really is. It's really cool.
Okay. Well, I guess that covers us for today, Frank.
And I promise we're going to be hardcore into the fishing, and I won't be talking about...
Shipping
and all that.
But peewee shrimp, yes.
Peewee shrimp, because... The shrimp you're buying right now hatched this last fall as the shrimp were migrating out. And the bigger ones you're going to buy this fall are just the ones that grew up. So all the big shrimp have left. We're dealing with their young, their offspring. And over the next 3 months, they will be up to the big size that you want. We'll still have some big, decent size, bigger size shrimp. But keep in mind, if you're 6 foot tall... And you have a 6-inch hero sandwich, that's about 20% of your length.
Mm-hmm.
What would be 6 inches from 6 foot?
Yeah, we'll 10%? Go with 10%. Yeah.
Okay, 10%. Average fish you catch is 20 inches long. If the shrimp is 2 inches, tiny little 2 inches long, that's the same as a 6-inch sub sandwich for you. Are you tired of getting a lot of bites? They pick on your bait. You don't get the fish. Switch to a smaller shrimp with a smaller hook and let them get the whole thing. That was goodbye. See you, RJ.
See you, Frank.